The Governor's Council on Domestic Abuse released a long-range plan yesterday to provide more resources to victims of domestic violence here in Wisconsin.
According to the council, just over 2,000 victims and children receive help from victim service programs every day. They also say about 250 requests for help go unmet because local agencies don't have the necessary resources.
Tony Gibbard is with us. He's the public policy coordinator for End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin, and he's worked closely with the council on this report. Tony, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, let's get a handle on the people in Wisconsin who are being affected by domestic abuse and violence. What do the statistics show about who's being affected?
Well, we know that it's a statewide problem and that it reaches all areas of our state. The statistics show that over 700,000 Wisconsin women at one point in their life have been victims of domestic violence. So when you think about that number, it's larger than the populations of Milwaukee and Green Bay combined. So whether we realize it or not, whether we know it or not, we all know at least one person and probably many people who have been affected by this epidemic throughout our state.
And what kinds of resources are there for someone who has been the victim of domestic violence?
Well, the good news is that there are service providers and agencies across the state. Every county in Wisconsin has either a shelter or a service provider that works with victims in that community. And so those resources and support really can be life-saving, and they make a difference for the victims they reach. Our goal with the plan is to make sure that every victim and every child, really, who's exposed to domestic violence has the opportunity to receive those services and that those services meet their needs.
And you point out that it's women being affected, but it's also children. So it's a family effect here that's going on. How does it affect children?
Well, you know, and I should say, this is an issue that affects women primarily. When we look at the numbers, there really is a gendered nature to the issue of domestic violence, but that's not to say that some men aren't also affected and also victims. So it's important to point out, when we paint the picture of how this impacts lives, there is that aspect to it, but we want to be clear that services are available for men as well as women. But getting to your question, children are impacted in a variety of ways, and that impact is different on a case-by-case basis. But children who grow up in abusive homes, that has a real impact on their lives. It has an impact on how they perceive relationships as they grow into adulthood. It can impact their ability to learn and to be educated and to be their most productive as they grow. And those children, the facts show, are at increased risk for abuse to themselves personally. So there is a multi-layer to the impact that they experience.
Now, the long-range plan is going into place, and it's intended to help meet some of these needs that are going unmet right now. People aren't getting the services they need. Where are the biggest needs right now?
Well, one thing that the plan shows, and the statistics that Rob mentioned, is that the need, first and foremost, is to make sure that core services to victims are available. And that includes both the crisis response services that some folks might be familiar with, emergency shelter, counseling, some basic legal information and advocacy, but also addressing the longer term needs of victims so that they can achieve self-sufficiency and stay safe and stay independent of abusers. So that includes services to address financial abuse and make sure that they have the resources they need for housing and financial stability, to address the longer term effects of trauma, but then also to make sure that we have services throughout Wisconsin that really speak to victims and can address their unique cultural situations, that every victim and every survivor feels comfortable coming forward to an advocate who that they feel understands them and to which they can relate.
So you mentioned reaching out to different ethnic groups involved here. Are there particular groups that you want to reach out to who have a need that might be harder to reach in through traditional means?
Well, I wouldn't say there's one particular group or even several particular groups, but I think when you think about it, that talking about domestic violence really is very difficult for anyone, that those are intimate, very painful details. And so someone who comes from a particular cultural group necessarily would want to disclose to someone who that they feel at least has a good chance of understanding them, understanding their background, understanding their culture, understanding their values. So to reach every victim, every survivor, every child, it's important that the services throughout the state give victims that opportunity.
And for a long time, there's been a culture of shame around domestic abuse. It's one of the biggest hurdles is getting people to come forward and say that they need help. And, you know, you can go into bathrooms sometimes, women's rooms, and see signs about abuse or in doctor's offices. Is that a culture that you see shifting, that it's becoming more acceptable and okay to step forward and say that you need help because you're in an abusive situation, whoever you are?
I definitely do think that as a movement, we've made progress in expanding the public conversation about domestic violence. But victims still report that even if they know about services that are available, it's sometimes a struggle to access them. We had a survivor with us to release the plan here in Madison, and she actually mentioned that she saw a pamphlet for her local service provider in a women's room. But because she was in a very rural community, very isolated, she didn't have transportation to get to the agency, and that agency didn't actually have an emergency shelter. So that is what she needed. She needed an emergency shelter, and it wasn't available in her community. So it took several more incidents before she finally felt that she was able and that the situation was severe enough that she was able to leave.
Now, shelters are a piece of the puzzle here that you're working on. How do we get more accessible shelters to a greater number of people who need them?
Well, shelters are, as you mentioned, one piece of the puzzle. And we have seen communities across the state really invest a lot of time and resources in making sure that they are contributing to making sure that those services are available. For example, here in Dane County, DAZE, Domestic Abuse Intervention Services, recently opened its new shelter. The Racine Women's Resource Center kicked off its capital campaign for a new shelter in western Racine County, a more rural area, yesterday, in fact. And Manitowoc is expanding its shelter, and they kicked off their capital campaign a couple of weeks ago. So one thing that the report demonstrates, and it relates to the conversation you just had with your last guest, is that individuals, private companies, really do step up and do support a lot of the investment in victim services. About half of the resources that go to supporting domestic violence victims in the state of Wisconsin come from non-governmental sources. And so continuing that momentum and making sure that communities understand that this is an issue and continue to invest in making sure that all victims are protected and have shelter is definitely a huge part of what we're trying to do.
And along with that, you know, obviously education is a big piece of what you're doing. What do you think needs to be done to educate whole communities about domestic violence?
Right. Well, domestic violence shelters and service providers, the advocates that work with victims, really are the experts in their communities about this issue. And what we really need to do is make sure that they are empowered to lead their communities. Once people are talking about this issue, they can be part of the solution. Domestic violence is obviously a social issue that feeds off the beliefs and attitudes of those who perpetrate domestic violence. And we need to think about how, over the long term, we're going to change as a society and as communities to shift those attitudes and beliefs. And so when you're working in crisis situations to respond to the emergency life and death needs of victims, it's very difficult to have that broader view. But we want to make sure that advocates have the resources so that they can do that and that we can eventually make it so that there isn't a need for domestic violence shelters in the state of Wisconsin.
So educating people and changing beliefs, systems of beliefs and attitudes is a tough nut to crack. How do you begin doing that?
Well, the most effective work that can be done in that regard is with the next generation. So making sure that we're reaching out to youth and teens and really fostering a sense of what healthy relationships look like so that they don't grow up with the attitudes and beliefs that have allowed domestic violence to continue. And there's a lot of exciting work that's being done in schools and with educators to shift those attitudes and beliefs to encourage teens to think about their values and to think about what healthy relationships look like. And that's something that the plan calls for, is we want to see more of that in the state of Wisconsin, because with all of the competing things that go on in a classroom, often educators and teachers don't get to do that important work, and we'd like to see more of that happen.
Well, right now we're talking with Tony Gibbert of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. The group, along with the Governor's Council on Domestic Abuse, have released a long-range plan for maintaining and expanding services to abuse victims. And we're talking right now about that plan, what it entails, and what needs to be done to move Wisconsin forward in providing more services to victims.
And we invite you to join the conversation. What more do you think could be done to help domestic abuse survivors here in Wisconsin? Have you turned to these types of services in the past? What did you find? Was it enough? Was it something you could use? Have you worked in providing these services now or in the past? Let us know at 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org.
We're talking about Wisconsin's long-term plan to address domestic abuse in the state. Tony Gibbert is our guest. He's public policy coordinator with End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin.
And we're taking your calls. What types of services should be made available to victims of domestic abuse? What is the key, you think, to ending domestic violence altogether? And do you know someone who's sought help in Wisconsin's system, or do you work in one of these service providers around the state? Love to hear your story. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email talk@wpr.org or comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go to the phones now. We're going to take our first call from Michael in Green Bay. Hi, Michael.
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey there. I was just wanting to have a comment on what you guys are addressing. I myself personally going through this domestic thing, find it very sad that being single and being a male and going through this, that there's nothing out there for me. I spent a ladder of my 2 days looking for assistance, and I couldn't find anything. All I was told was I don't have children, I don't have a drug problem, I'm not an alcoholic. And so there's nothing for me. And I even went to a place where I volunteer called St. John's, and I asked them for assistance thinking, you know, since they help everybody else, maybe they can help me. And the girl who took my call named Abby said that she would get back to me, and then the next day she didn't. So I called her back, and she laughed and said, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot about you. And I told her, you know, that's not a laughing matter. You know, this is something important for me that you can forget about me when I'm one paycheck or two away from becoming homeless.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael. I'm sorry to hear about the troubles you're having. Michael is having trouble locating services. What does he need to know?
Well, I'd encourage Michael to go to our website, endabusewi.org, and click on the Get Help tab. There are a number of domestic violence victim service providers in the Fox Valley area, and those organizations do provide services to all individuals. If he wants to leave his contact information with the producer, I'd be happy to try to get him some help too. St. John's is an organization he mentioned, and I'm not familiar with it. So sometimes it's about knowing the right organizations to call. And so there's also the National Domestic Abuse Hotline. That's a good resource, one-stop shop, and that is 800-799-SAFE.
So are there any hurdles that you know of to partners, especially men in a same-sex couple who are being abused? Are there any hurdles to them getting the help that they need that you know of, or is this an instance of scarcity of resources?
There are a number of hurdles, and there are a number of unique hurdles for individuals who are in same-sex relationships. Just the stigma of homophobia that is still prevalent in our society is a hurdle to get over, because when a victim in a same-sex relationship is trying to reach out for help, they don't even necessarily know if the person that they're going to talk to is comfortable with their relationship, let alone addressing the domestic violence situation. So we want folks to know that the domestic violence service providers in the state of Wisconsin are available, that they do work with same-sex couples. And the a point of emphasis in the plan is to make sure that we do more outreach in that way, and that there are specific services for the LGBT community, because research shows that those individuals are more comfortable reaching out to an organization that they know is going to understand the unique barriers and issues that they face.
All right. Well, thank you, and good luck to you, Michael. And We go next to Lynn, who joins us from Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. Someone very, very close to me is in a woman's shelter here in Eau Claire with her three children. She had to walk away from everything, and the little perpetrator is still out perpetrating. Recently, you know, she's in Bolton House, or Bolton Refuge House, one of them, and they took the washers and dryers out of the building that serviced four families that had to walk away from everything because of abuse. And that's further abuse. Some of those women, one of the newer residents has three or four children. English is not her first language, and at no access to a vehicle. Luckily, the young woman that I'm talking about has me and our family. And it's heinous to further take from women who have had to walk away from everything.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. And I'm glad that you're helping your friend and that she's in a safe house for now and she's got some resources there. But is what Lynn talking about some of the need that you're addressing with this plan to fund and provide, you know, services, not only the safe houses themselves and a secure place to live, but also access to amenities within those houses?
Definitely. And I'm not familiar with the specific issue at Bolton Refuge House, but certainly shelters and service providers are scraping by. And so I'm not surprised that there might be an issue of, you know, just being able to maintain some of the basic amenities that you would expect in a communal living situation. The caller mentioned transportation. As we kind of talked about, transportation issues for victims, even in, you know, a mid-sized city like Eau Claire, there are real barriers to being able to get to jobs, get to interviews, get to childcare and medical appointments. And so if a victim is escaping an abusive situation and the abuser is the one who has the car, that can put victims in a very, very difficult situation, just living financially independent away from the source of danger.
Now, one part of this that we haven't talked about yet is the legal aspect. What challenges are there for victims of domestic abuse legally?
So one thing that the plan emphasizes is the need for civil legal services for low-income victims of domestic violence. And this is an aspect of our state's response to domestic violence that often gets overlooked because we think about the law enforcement response. We think about the prosecution of crimes related to domestic violence. But we don't think about the fact that when the criminal proceedings are over, sometimes simultaneously, the victim and the perpetrator are often involved in family court. And when victims and perpetrators have children in common, really the decisions that are made in civil court, in family court, can be much more consequential for victims and their children, because family courts can order that victims and perpetrators have ongoing contact. So you can invest tons of resources in prosecuting the crime, tons of resources in trying to keep the victim and the perpetrator separated as part of the criminal justice system. But when victims walk into family court without an attorney that can help them assert their rights, they're often put right back into the crucible of domestic abuse. And so that's a real weakness in our state's response, that we don't invest in making sure that victims are protected and represented. Most states in the Midwest invest in that service. They spend on average over $7 million in civil legal services for low-income clients. Wisconsin spends $0. And so that's a real weakness, as I said, in our state's response to domestic violence.
And I want to get in an email from Judy here who says, shelters that take pets are needed. Families who must uproot themselves are traumatized again by having to leave behind a beloved pet, often to be abused or killed by the perpetrator. Humans aren't the only ones affected. An interesting point there. Is that something that's under consideration?
Yes, and it's something that shelters have worked on over the course of many years to try to develop programs so that pets and animals can be safe when victims leave abusive situations, particularly for victims who don't have children. Often their closest connection in the world, because they've been isolated and abused, is a beloved pet. And so to leave that home and leave the pet behind can be so painful. And sometimes it's a reason why victims stay in abusive relationships. And we know that abusers will sometimes use animals and pets as a way to send a message to victims, that they will abuse the pets or even kill the pets as a way to say to the victim that you're next, that I did this to the pet and I can do this to you. It's horrific, but it's the reality. And so Judy's comment is right on.
Well, as long as we're talking about it, homicide is another aspect of this, and some victims of domestic abuse become homicide victims. What sorts of aspects here are we working with to try to prevent that? Mm-hmm. That's the most extreme case that you want to avoid at all costs. What do we do to keep that from happening?
Absolutely. And just looking at the homicide data, first and foremost, demonstrates that this is a statewide problem. 69 of Wisconsin's 72 counties have had a domestic violence homicide since 2000. The vast majority of our state. And what the plan calls for is utilizing our knowledge that we've been gaining about risk and lethality risk to give intensive services and outreach to victims who are most at risk. National studies show that only 4% of domestic violence homicide victims had contact with a domestic violence shelter or service provider. So on the one hand, that's really good news because it shows that when you reach out to a service provider, your risk of being involved in a domestic violence homicide goes down, thankfully. But it also shows that many victims are still isolated and don't have access to those resources. So working with law enforcement and other agencies or service providers that have contact with victims and have them evaluate risk and lethality and then refer those victims to more intensive services so we can break down that isolation that can be deadly is something that communities are starting to look at and that the plan encourages.
And before we let you go, if someone's listening and they're a victim of domestic abuse, they haven't reached out for help yet, what should their first step be?
Well, as I said, they can go to our website, endabusewi.org, and /get help, or click on the Get Help button, or they can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which is 1-800-799-SAFE.
1-800-799-SAFE. Tony, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Tony Gibbert, Public Policy Coordinator at End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. He worked closely with the Governor's Council on Domestic Abuse, which released a long-range plan to provide more resources to victims here in Wisconsin.